Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to the world's longest running football fans podcast from CelticUnderground.net. Now I have to offer my apologies. I have had the audio from this podcast from Young St Anthony for about a week now, but due to a variety of things getting in the way, I haven't put up. So apologies, it's been 2 weeks since the excellent John Fallon podcast. Now you may wonder why we get some guests on who are not automatically obvious to be Celtic people. Well, Young St Anthony, as you know, is an author of one Celtic book already, and I don't think it's a secret that he's working on another one. And as part of that, he speaks to some very interesting people to get an insight into our club or historical figures within our club. So this week's podcast is no different. I got a text saying you should put this person on the podcast. That's up to you. We don't have an editorial line here. You do the interview. You send me the audio. So it's a bit of a surprise. I'll leave it for you to listen when Saint does the introductions. Prior to that, I would like to thank everyone who entered the John Fallon signed biography competition, including the likes of Jerry Coogan, Tim Cook, blah 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 blah, John Gallagher, and others whose names I don't have written down in front of me, Ian Wallace, Paul Callaghan, who entered the competition. You and many others who, as I say, don't have your names in front of me, have been entered into the hat, and Saint will be pulling out the draw and sending out very shortly. The answer was, of course, that John Fallon went to Motherwell. Anyway, enough of me. This is him, St Anthony. With him, Chick Young.
I'm delighted to be joined this afternoon by Chick Young, and we always start in the normal manner by saying, Chick, what was your first football game and who was your first football hero?
You know, you asked that question a lot, and someday I think I'll just make one up, because I honestly can't remember. It's a strange, we just football daft, like kids of my generation used to play football morning, night, you know, from get light till get dark. And I had a strange affection in my early years for Hearts, very bizarrely. And I guess in retrospect now, it was because they were the kind of successful team of the 50s, really, and I must have taken away affection. I was brought up in an environment where I probably should have been a Rangers fan. I was born in Govan. I was born at Elder Street.
I was crossing the road.
Well, the fire station. My dad was a fireman. But my dad died when I was only five, so we moved. But we ended up mostly. I was brought Moss Park, which, you know, and the funny thing about, you know, the environment I was in, my pals were Rangers fans and all that, and my mother, the first kind of football matches we went to were, of course, you used to remember, you used to open the gates, the last 20s we used to call it, 20 minutes to go, you could get in, and my mother used to lecture me about going to Ivory Stoker, because there was just a toddler across the park, which I wasn't allowed to go. But I had another pal, two pals, one who was a Third Lanark fan, and one who was a Clyde fan, big Clyde fan, and she would allow me to go with this guy, David Yale, on the bus into town, the Human's Umbrella, and then you used to get another bus out to Shawfield, that was where you went, and that was alright, but I couldn't go across the park because something to do with the crowds being too big, and then I could get a bus to Cathkin as well. I don't know what my first game was. I think it might have been at Ibrox. I think I might have gone across the park, and you know, against my mother's will, and I've got a vague recollection, this was a long time ago, of football on the telly. I always thought football was in black and white, and then you see a football stadium, you got, I remember coming up the steps of Terrace Nova, and you go, God, the pitch is green, and just captivated by the
vivid colour.
Well, yeah, it probably it would either be at Cathkin or Shawfield or Ibex, most likely Ibex, but I've got no idea.
What about a football hero then? First influence on you as a boy?
John White, the great John White. I had a thing, I was mostly a Scotland fan, you know. I had this wee thing about Hearts when I was a kid, which I quickly realised did me no good whatsoever. But it's about Scotland, so the great Scotland team. And John White, when at primary school, when you know, you always I'm so and so, or Jimmy Johnston, or whoever it be, I was always with John White. And even when I, in my days when I was playing amateur, and then we do my bumpers in our charity team, I always said the number 8 was my number because of John White. I thought, and you know, I'm bought his biography, and every time I did an interview with Dennis Law recently, or any of his contemporaries, and I'm probably the only person that ever brings the conversation and interviews round to John White.
I think it's fair enough mention for young people here. John White died tragically.
He was killed by lightning.
Yeah,
in a golf course. He was sheltered under a tree, which is never a good idea, as John White, where he's still with us, would tell you. And it was hit by the tree, was struck by lightning, and he was killed. He played the great Spurs team in the early 60s, but was very much the great Scotland forward line of the Henderson Whites and John Law and Wilson. And he was wonderful. These guys, I was lucky in a sense that great players for them, who I just looked on from afar because of my career. You know, Bobby Lennox is one of the greatest guys I've ever met in football. And you become Baxter. I was chairman of Baxter's testimonial committee. You know, Dennis. You know, people I could just call by the first name.
Huge personalities.
Yeah, and I would never be narrowed down to Rangers for players, Celtic players, and I was never, it's the one thing, I was never a Sivan fan as a kid. What happened there was my, as I said earlier, my dad died, my mum remarried, another great man called Alex Rowan, and he was a big Sivan fan. As my career started to take off in my early 20s, Fergie was still manager at Paisley. I was at his press conference when he was appointed from East Stirling. There's a forest in the boardroom down there. People think he's big time. Well, he is now, but then. I was able to visit St Mirren more and more, and I found myself getting this affection. Now, you know, I got to be able to get tickets and season tickets for my dad and all that. And it wasn't until I was in my 20s I found myself cursed by this disease of beginning to get an affection for St Mirren, you know, and it's lasted ever since. So people could go on all day about he's a Rangers fan and all that, but denied it was brought in an environment where I should have been.
I always remember my dad saying there was such a thing in those days as a floating fan. He said, you get guys who didn't particularly support any team, but on the day, this is the days before season tickets, and you can just pay the turnstiles. If Celtic had the best game of the day, you went to Parkhead. If it was Partick Thistle, you went to Fir Hill. So he says that if it was a particular match, he says that there was a lot more floating supporters, whereas these days people tend to be more of an allegiance if they go to a game.
And another thing was, you know, you were dictated when you're as young as that by the geography of the thing. You know, I'm hardly going to go to Tannadice or Dodgy or Edinburgh, but Glasgow clubs, yeah. And you know, I don't care what people allege I am or I am not, and I've had great relationships at different times with Celtic. And see, a football club, it's only as good as the people who are in charge of it, the custodians of it, at any given time. Billy McNeil, I absolutely adored. He was fantastic to me. I had a wonderful relationship with him as manager, player, and you as well. Billy used to, I remember going to the Celtic pre-season tour 1979 for the Evening Times to Germany. It were about 10 days. I was the only Scottish journalist on that trip. And Big Billy used to make me give me a lift back to training or whatever we were, and we wouldn't let the bus driver start the engine until I'd sung the Celtic song to the whole bus. It's just brilliant, you know. And that's just good people. So, and I've got, you know, had great relationships with people. And we've talked about Kenny. And
I was going to bring his own manager, so we'll do things in a different order. You've mentioned McNeil. Now, when you were a young man starting out in journalism, I mean, there was guys like Jock Steen and Jock Wallace, and even the young Ferguson, they were intimidating people.
Well, before that, even my people say, did you ever get intimidated in interviews and that? And the answer is no, because when I started, and there was different access for journalists then. I had to phone, and to the day I die, it was Mr. Steen and Mr. Waddle, Willie Waddle. Mm-hmm. And they were terrifying for a young man. I used to sit and stare at the phone to psych myself up for a bit. Because you used to get, you know, these days you get the hotline number right through the desk before or after training, whenever I used to be, what paper I was on for. And they used to petrify me, you know, because I used to go in it, and Mr. Steen would say, "Ah, what's your pals at Ibrox saying today?" And I would, of course, I would spout forth what Billy Waddle had said to me. And so you learn then, you know, when you face these two, and later, as you said, Big Jock Wallace, you tend not to be worried about talking to managers, particularly when you're older and wiser.
And guys like Billy and John Gregg and Alec Ferguson that come through after that, they weren't shrinking violets either.
No. I mean, Sir Alex was, and I'd been part of him at St Mirren, went to Aberdeen, had this whole West of Scotland mentality, and I was working the Evening Times, and used to blame us for everything. It would utter complete bollocks, and they all bought into it. So you were given, a perception that you were anti
Aberdeen,
or anti Celtic, or anti Rangers, or, you know, whereas, and up to a point, it used to worry me long ago at Game Water off a Ducks Bank. You know, my career's been pretty successful. I look at my house, I look at my boat, I look at my car, you know, and I have a nice lifestyle, and I'm toddling over the finish line.
So how did it start for you then? Was it newspapers?
I realised earlier on, I must have been quite wise when I was a kid, because I realised early on that I probably wasn't going to make it as a player. I wanted to be a player, and I realised this was becoming more and more unlikely because of the ability level. And so I managed, when I was at school, I decided to take lessons in shorthand and typing. So I forced to do that, and that was in the late 60s, where I was in a class with 30 girls, and all the boys thought, I had that foresight to do that, and then applied for every job, for every news. I don't think of Willing's Press Guide, which listed all the newspapers in Europe, or the world, actually, and main papers, all in the UK. I wrote letter after letter after letter after, you know, thanks for keeping us well. And one day, famously, two letters came through my mum's letterbox, one from the Stornoway Gazette, and one from the Daily Record, offering me a job, one refusing me. Incredibly, the Stornoway Gazette knocked me back, the Daily Record accepted me. And I went to the Daily Record as what they called a copy boy, which was just running about making the tea, running the trade. And I worked there for 2.5 years.
That was your apprenticeship then?
Yeah, and then I went down there, I worked in the local paper in Girvan, that closed. I worked in the local paper in the Girvan Herald after that, in Ayrshire. And then things did.
And were you doing sport at the time, or
no,
had you been doing anything?
Local news.
So what was your first breakthrough in the football?
The first full time football job ever had, and it's been that way ever since, was after the Irvine Herald. Kenny Gallagher, who worked for the Daily Record, a lovely man, now sadly no longer with us. Kenny was a job going, and he wrote a column for a piece every month for Football Monthly, and he phoned Pat Collins, who was the dad of Patrick Collins now, who writes for the Mail Sunday. Old Pat, old man. I went down for an interview and I got the job in London. So that was summer of 73. That was me full time football journalism, and it's been that way ever since. So down in London, and then the magazine 73-74, and it closed. I was supposed to go into the World Cup in Germany 74. The magazine closed that summer. I got nearly done. I was £1,000 in 1974.
Money.
I invested that wisely. I went to Paris for 4 days with a pal and bought an MGB Roadster. I put a deposit in an MGB Roadster. Eventually, stayed on in London for a wee while doing various freelance stuff. And then after that, I came back up the road to Scottish Football Magazine. Scottish Football Magazine turned to Scottish Football Weekly. I was editor of that. Then I joined Scottish Daily News. Mm-hmm. Went out in 75, Scottish Daily mm-hmm. News. And then it closed. It closed quite a lot of places. And then I went.
Well, if you're talking about Scottish Football Weekly, you know, what happened to that? Because that was a popular magazine at the time. I remember as a boy that was your favourite because it was in colour and it had Scottish stories and things. But it's just like finance, circulation, you know? Maybe knows what it should have been.
That's it. Advertising, I think, was a key issue as well. Mm. And I know people keep talking about bringing back Scottish. Magazines are, you know, very few magazines have got any longevity, you know, even at that time. And of course, the whole publishing industry's now all changed because you know, social media and all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. But back then, I left to join the Daily News, so I wasn't responsible for closing that. They lasted a while after I left. But,
So, the media that you've worked in, what do you prefer? Would you say it would be? Are you still a newspaper man at heart, or do you prefer the radio and the telly?
I prefer the radio. I think of all the media, and I've worked for television, radio, newspapers, books, magazines. I just think radio is the medium for me. You know, I'm not saying it for it, but it's for me. Television, I had a handsome career in television. Freddie Sports was wonderful to me. You know, the adventures I've had. But there's something about television becomes an exact science. I think it's a problem. Somebody says to you, they want 1 minute, 27 seconds, then they want not 26 or not 28, but 127. You know, radio is less scripted and you can breathe. You know, we have conversation to go away, totally tangents. I like sitting around the table discussing the game with people who know about the game, and I like it to develop that way. And I think radio allows it that to breathe. Where television doesn't, you know.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And I did a couple of, when ended start of this century, I did a couple of non-football programmes, and it was supposed to be serious. I did a thing with Rod Stewart. It's a chick thing, and then when chick goes to Hollywood, they sent me. Supposed to go to Hollywood to see if they make me into a star, which was great, and I loved it. But you know, the wind and the tide take you a certain way, and television's great. But I just, there's something about radio I've always found just great.
There's a friend of mine. He's asked me to bring this up. He says at one point in Radio Clyde in the late 80s, you did a thing called Chick Young Souvenir Programme, which was like a desert island disc for footballers.
Yeah.
So who would that have been mixed in, if any?
Tommy Burns, I remember. Tommy was, so that's what exactly it was. It was a rip off of Desert Island Disc meets football, and I think it was an hour. I think they get six songs they got to choose. We talk about the career and play the football, because people, I've always, you know, my next love is music after football. I'd love to be a DJ at one point, but Tommy Burns is a brilliant singer, and if it was that they had, I would just, and the intimacy of it was just, we recorded it in a wee studio, so just the two of us. As the old technology's moved on, it was old reel-to-reel recorder, so I had the headphones on, and Tommy Burns was just brilliant. Mac the Knife was Tommy's song.
That's right.
And I'm playing it, and it was brilliant because I could just go, he's singing along as we're playing it. So I just pulled the fader down and record, and so with Tommy singing it, which is wonderful. All sorts of people in there. Remember Jack McGinn, who was president of the SFA at the time. Certainly chairman of Celtic. Jack was wonderful, came in and did the same thing, and of course depending on the generation the music was totally different, which was good. But Jack came in and brilliant, and it went away.
And of course
there's no mobile phones in these days. Great, and I went back to check the tape, not a thing had been recorded.
Oh God.
Not a thing. And you know, what can you do? Pretend it never happened, because the programme's not going to go out.
That's always my fear when I do something. I'm waiting at this light here, and I'm thinking, I'm always working the result. Is that Orban's lights on?
So Jack was good enough. Never come out. He came back and we did the whole thing again, which is never good because it's not spontaneous. But that was good. The old souvenir programme. And what happened was with that, and because it was Radio Clyde rather than BBC Radio Scotland. You know, it was a West of Scotland thing, so it was Rangers and Celtic. And I think you want to keep it high pro, and there gets a point where you're thinking you're interviewing the greenkeeper that they're a local bowling. own club, you know, so the profile, so it has had a shelf life. But I think you bring back. And actually, if you're talking to Scotland, you know, there's, you could even turn it around the other way, get Billy Connolly to talk about football and the press, which I know, Billy's fantastic at that. The great when Celtic won. Celtic won the league a few years ago. I think Gordon was manager and Billy presented the championship.
He did.
It was that year, and we were told I was doing the trackside stuff, do not approach it. Connolly won't be doing this, or Billy won't be doing that. Anyway, I'm standing there tunnel, he comes out, check my boy, and goes, and he's, I'm actually trying to get rid of Billy Connolly because I'm told, I thought, oh, stuff this, so would you do it? Of course. There's a minute interview, about 17 minutes, and he was wonderful. From Celtic, you know, he's Patrick, the alleged love of Patrick Thistle, and he was great. And these are things that, you know, they just tight, flowed them into my territory, you know. It's been amazing.
So you're 65 now, approaching 65.
Too much, carry on.
So looking back in your career, is there one thing that stands out, a game or an event that you covered that you think that was brilliant?
I think, you know, to have been the World Cups, you know, Italian, well, first one I covered.
Did you get to Argentina?
No, I didn't get to Argentina. The first one I worked for was in Spain, 82, and then it was Mexico, 86, and then I was in Italy, 90, didn't go to America, 94, France, 98. I went to Scotland in the pre-season due to career, I remember with Bertie Roach, 2002, 2006 I did Germany, 2010 I did South Africa. You know, that itself has been amazing.
So that would be the highlight,
I think
that
level. France, 98. And Italy, I mean, every time I would say France, I think, Italy was fantastic. And to go to Mexico, to go with. And even other things that people forget, Nick, 2000, I used to go with the Scottish youth team to the European Championship finals.
And then, 82 and Paul McStay was the captain in the winner.
82. Of course it was. It was. And then to Mexico the next year, youth team. Yeah, it's Paul the captain.
Paul was the captain. There's no photograph of him being carried aloft. There's all guys Neil Cooper and Pat Levin and
Philip and Joe McInally, Ali Dick. Yeah, it was good. They were brilliant. I was there the whole. We thought we're going for a week because there were three qualifying games. I ended up with Fortnite and they played the Olympic Stadium in Helsinki. You're right, of course. But you see, that was big things like that's why I cemented the relationship with the likes of Paul McStay and I became his agent, because these kids, that was a great thing for me at the time, because here were kids growing up and they knew you, the first journalist they got to know, and they realised they could trust you. So that was all a great investment, you know, relationships. But yeah, so I thought Paul was Andy Roxburgh, Walter Smith was the assistant. Then we went to qualify for the under 19.
How did they go in from Mexico?
Quarterfinals, get beaten by Poland, I think. Come out, but it was they beat Mexico in the Aztec Stadium, 108,000 on the ground. It was fantastic. Stevie won 1-0. Stevie Clark, Dennison Mumpler scored. That was just amazing. And the thing about that, we were away. You know, we went to Colorado Springs for altitude training. Yeah. 2 weeks was it?
Acclimatized.
Before that, before we went to Mexico. And then I did the same 86 World Cup with the teammates, full team Santa Fe. Los Angeles, Mexico, and I mean, privilege, you know, I've been one lucky son.
So, in terms of Celtic, then, what's the game or event that is a journalist that you recall most about Celtic? You wouldn't have been in Lisbon, would you? Too?
No, I never went to Lisbon. But the BBC, we had all the games on the run to Seville, and, you know, I had to get quite close to Martin O'Neill, and that was a privilege all along the way, you know. And it was heartbreaking at the end in Seville that Celtic never won that, because you realise in that, I think in that run, what a good player Henrik Larsson was. What a great player Larsson was. The goal, the heady goal, because I was sitting, it's unbelievable. So the Celtic bench is about Martin and the big Stevie and Robbo, and then there was me and the BBC and a technician, and then the medical team, you know, on that. I was actually, it was a privilege, you know. It's something you get paid for, you think, I'm sitting here on Celtic bench at a European final. And the thing I remember was Larson's header, just such a line in it from the touchline. And going in, and what a phenomenal football player he was, you know. Moments like that, privileged moments. Great. I think, yeah, I mean, they're into Seville, Blackburn, beating Blackburn and all that.
Liverpool.
But being so close,
I think the good thing about
BBC, you know, bought their way into the, you know, weird exclusive.
I think the good thing about being two English teams was it put Scottish football on the map a wee bit, gave us a wee bit of self-respect.
There's
maybe no got these days, but we had it then.
There's no doubt about that. And things like, I think I said to you, going, funny things like Big Billy, that trip to Germany, he used to give me good stories. He says to me, right, I think it was Wrestling, they were called an amateur team. He says, I'm going to give a debut to two young boys tonight, John Halpin and Charlie Nicholas. So I've written a story. So we agree, but the boy at Gerald's, we will give Charlie £100. So we take Charlie, my old pal Alistair Devine, photographer, ready to. So I'll decide to do this kind of in a Paris match, black and white. Windswept and interested as Billy Corry was. So we go down to the old warehouses in the Brewer Law. And we get Charlie, you know, it was like with the collar up, that kind of stuff.
Wouldn't mean him, would
he? Aye, exactly. With the gear on and all that. And Al does these great pictures. And this is Charlie's first big break of publicity. And he gets sorted out with £100 all the gear from the boy that owns the shop. Anyway, first of all, I'm really bad. I write the words for the story. It's a centrepiece spread in the Evening Times.
I remember it, actually.
And the headline was Bonnie, Prince, Charlie. And we were going, so me and we are first edition, easy, the first question I've ever got on in the morning. That's good. And the presses are running. And I went, oh, boxy. And we looked at the pictures and just took them that arty farty way with his graffiti and all that. Charlie collar. I remember it was his collar up. The graffiti behind just thought it was worse, but it was dirty orange bastards. And we never looked at what was. You had to stop the paper. Did you stop the paper?
Take it out.
Airbrush it. That's what they did at the time. I mean, it lost thousands of the run every time you're losing. But you had to. And actually, I had a copy for years. I've no idea it's gone now. But it was hysteric. And funnily enough, you thought somebody get out and some. But nobody ever complained or
observed. No.
But it was definitely.
Do you know, I remember that? The reason why I remember it is that Nicholas had just broke through at a time and he was a scoring sensation. And I said to my mother, God rest her, I said, "Man, look here, Charlie Nicholas, that's the Celtic player. He's got his designer clothes on and all that for this fancy shop up at him." And she looked at me and she was like, "I said, they bought him at a charity shop." Because that sometimes with the most expensive stuff, it doesn't look expensive.
Charlie, I love it. See, my old man, my stepdad, who was a big St. Man's fan, he loved Charlie Nicholas. He says, "Look at that boy." See, the things that you don't see obviously, my dad says to me, "Look at that boy play." He said, "He never misses the target." He says, see, my dad, I know this sounds really obvious, but at that time, my dad said to me, "See if you strike a ball and it just past the boys by an inch and people say, oh, what a great strike." He said, "It's not. See if you trundle a ball and it's on target, it's got more chance of getting the goal than that." And you know, that's, he says, Charlie Nicholas, when he strikes a ball, always goes, it's always below 8 feet and between the 8 yards. So you see, I know that, and people go, "What a shot, just past the post." Well, actually it's no. And it's just like, I know that's startling the obvious, but it never crossed my mind before. Whereas if it turned all at the goalkeeper, mate,
I think the great about Charlie is we scratched the surface. I don't think we ever saw the player that he could have been.
No,
for a whole number of reasons.
Well, Steen didn't want him to go to Arsenal because he knew Champagne Charlie lifestyle and all that. So, you know, but he's such a great, lovable character. I'm very, very fond of him. Always got him well.
So, you're quite a high profile journalist. lost as such. And I often wonder, like, Jonathan Watson does this impersonation of you.
And well, that's what's haunted me with Celtic fans, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose he's not done you a favour there, has he?
In one sense, no. In another sense, yes.
What I was about to ask is it not quite surreal watching the television and somebody taking you off?
Aye. I used to, when Only Excuse came out at first, I used to think Johnny did great impersonations of everybody, but that I was a kind of caricature. I thought, oh, that's not me, that's... And then it slowly dawned on me, I thought, well, why am I on there? Why is everybody else a good impersonation and I'm a caricature? I mean, you start to realise, is that what I really sound like? And then the whole rate, I mean, that's where the Rangers thing came from. And when it was a coincided with, I tell you what else happened at the time when Only Excuse, and it started in Only a Game, which was
a radio programme,
and I had just written a book about the Rangers first, and it sold, made me a fortune actually. Soonest, I was always pally with Soonest, and Soonest is Rangers' first year, Rebirth of the Blues, it was called. And that came out, so that they attached themselves because they thought I was a Rangers fan because I'd written about, I wrote about Mendy, if the money's right. That was a coincidence at the time. He milked that, and of course, Celtic fans at the time just assumed.
Yeah. And he grew legs for
them. And eventually, you get too weary of saying, I just go, I carry on. Everybody else can still go on, but then you go, right.
How do you feel when you see it, though? Does it not feel odd?
At the time, you might get used to it. Now it's, I mean, I'm not totally apathetic towards it, you know. I think, I tell you what, see, if it's funny, it's funny, and if it's not funny, it's done me a lot of favours. I'll tell you, when Rhys Strachan was player assistant manager at Coventry City, and I was sent down for Friday Sports, see, Coventry have got a great training complex, so I'm down there and doing the interview, filming it with camera at training ground. And I'm just about to see Ron Atkinson, Jank Big Ron would do an interview with me. And then to my absolute horror, I see Ron striding across the pitch toward him, striding out. Oh Christ, I'm in trouble now. I haven't asked for permission or something, you know, what's going to happen. And he walked right up, luckily the camera was still running. The camera was a guy called Billy Frew, God rest him, Billy's passed on cancer. But Billy's kept the camera because he thought he was going to film me getting pelters with Atkinson. He walked it up, but I'm just about to say, I'm really sorry. And he suddenly goes, this is me, Chick Young. I went, what? And I looked at Strachan. And he's gone on to the full impersonation, alleged impersonation. And he goes, oh, I'll bring the videos down. He's always wanted to meet you. So, and of course, when I said, can I do the interview with you, he was right up for it.
Good.
So it did open doors, to be fair, at the time. You know, it was...
Is it played out now? It was good for a few years, wasn't it?
I see I'm not important enough anymore to be involved in some mini programme. It doesn't bother me anyway, either way, you know. And the only thing is, you know, every day down the street somebody goes, I see, you know, I've actually heard this before, you know, I'm actually the first person to do this thing. So
what does the future hold for Chick Young then? Now that you're approaching retirement age?
I want to spend a lot more time in my boat. I want to go to hot countries. My father lives in Cape Town. I love Cape Town. If the BBC want me to do a game or something here and there, that'll be fine, but you know, you start realising that you're very much human, and I've lost pals to cancer, and you know, when you start thinking, so I just want to, I love Scotland in the summer, I hate it in the winter, I want to go to Cape Town or Spain, spend a bit of time and, you know, do a bit. See, I mean, as soon as, what I found out, Stephen, is in life is that as soon as you make a plan and decide to do something, somebody kicks you in the
teeth.
Well, near that. And you're better. So, yeah, you make plans up to a point, obviously, but, you know, I just want to have a laugh and, you know, have a good lunch most days and go to the boat and, you know, play some golf and just relax a bit, you know, and don't want to be, I don't know, and if I want to go, I'll go and see games, I'll probably buy a season ticket. for Paisley, will that eventually
put an end to it?
Put an end to the Celtic fans thinking I'm a Hun.
Can you say that?
Oh, sorry.
You'll get us in any trouble.
It's a big, when you sail my boat when I go out, you know, down the Clyde, it's funny, I always think so after down the channel, Port Starboard Boys, and all the ones that here are called Hun 1, Hun 2, Hun 3, Hun 4, and it's short for Hunters.
That makes you laugh.
So, Hunters, so you can call me a Hunter.
Well, whatever you choose, Chick, thanks for your time, and just wish
pleasure,
you all the best
Steve.
For the future.
Thank you. Pleasure.
I'm showing my age, but I cannot think of Chick Young and not think of the 1970s, when he was mainly the Evening Times, from my recollection. But it's maybe also just the type of style that Chick portrays, and he seems from a bygone age in terms of the way the media behave. Anyway, hope you enjoyed that podcast. Women in the background are one of the loudest voices we've had so far as background noise. So that was another good thing. So apologies for the audio going through that. There's a few things coming up with the foundation. There's a zip wire on Easter Saturday. I think there might still be time to participate if you want, or you can certainly sponsor people who are participating in it. And if you go to the Celtic FC Foundation website, you'll be able to do that. There is the Celtic FC Foundation Golf Day in June. Don't know if there's any spaces left on that. And there is also the Celtic FC Foundation night to celebrate or mark the 30th anniversary of the night we beat St Mirren 5-0 and Albert Kidd scored two goals against Hearts for us to win the league in very unusual and unexpected circumstances. And despite the fact that it was scored by him, the 5-0 game against St Mirren still contains, I think, one of my favourite all-time Celtic goals. Anyway, enough of my chat. We have a League and Cup double to win. Hence the reason why it seems that despite the challenges that we've had and some disagreements some fans have had with the manager, that the press are on it big time. Because it's squeaky bum time for them. Because their team may get a showing up again in the Cup. And if we've got a massive criticism, is there a bunker somewhere that the Celtic PR and executive board management team are hiding to come out and tell these people to get to and support our manager in this run-in? Celtic need to get the finger out. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady. That was him, St Anthony, with him, Charles Young.
It's never clear, but I'll tell you what you want to hear. I'll try to give you all you want, but giving love is not my strongest point. If that's the case, it's pointless going on. I'd rather be alone. 'Cause what I'm doing must be wrong, pouring my heart out in a song, owning up for prosperity for the whole damn world to see. Quietly now, while I
Turn a page, act one is over without costume change. The principal would like to leave the stage. The crowd don't understand.